Hello, everybody. Gary Stuckey here. Another interview today on Real Music. It's an interview with the former guitarist and lead singer of Grand Funk Railroad. That's right. Mark Farner is here, and he's talking about his new DVD, his work with Alice Cooper, and so much more. So stick around. We'll be right back. Hello, everybody. It's Gary here. Thanks for listening to Real Music right here on Anchor.fm. If you'd like to help support this podcast, you can do so by clicking on the donate button and giving whatever amount that you like, and I would really appreciate it. Helps keep this podcast going. And I'm looking forward to many more. You can reach out to me on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Let me know how you like it, or over on my email, GaryCStuckey@gmail.com. Let me know. And keep on listening right here on Anchor.fm. Welcome back to Real Music. I'm Gary Stuckey. You know, it's always awesome to be talking to rock and roll legends like Mark Farner and finding out about his life and just talking like we're having coffee and just relaxing, you know. It's so much fun laughing and getting to be able to share it with you and let you hear about it. It's fun for me, and I appreciate you listening. So here we go. Here's Mark Farner.
Hi, this is Mark.
Yes, Mark, this is Gary Stuckey. How's it going?
Good, Gary Stuckey. I'm proud to be sucking air today, buddy.
There you go. I might use that. I'm a Stuckey, and I'm sucking air. There you go. A lot of people might say I suck. But anyway, that's another story. No, I'm kidding. So, how are you doing? What's been going on with you?
Well, I'm doing fine. I'm healthy. My wife is healthy. She still loves me. We celebrated 43 years on the 8th of January. So
awesome. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Yes.
I think we're going to hang with it, you know.
You might as well. You've made it this far, right? You made it this far.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, that's good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's snowing up here in northern Michigan today, and, you know, we're just enjoying the winter.
Hey, there you go. What's this snow stuff you speak of? I'm in Alabama. We don't ever get all we never see that stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's just the fluffy rain is what it is, Gary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Once in a while, yeah, we see it every now and then, but, you know, but some people say they hate it. So, you know, I guess too much of a good thing maybe is, I don't know, it's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm excited to be talking to you. I've been a big fan, you know. I know you've heard that before. I've been a big fan of yours for years. But
that's a damn good answer, right there.
That's that's not bad though, right? I didn't hate you for all these years. I've been hating you since 1970.
It just couldn't wait to tell you.
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know. I waited all these years to let you know that I hate you. Yeah. I was watching, I think it was one of the first Behind the Music, you know, videos I ever saw, and it was, you know, Grand Funk Railroad, and I'd forgotten about, you know, it had been a while, but that was a cool show, a lot of stories, you know, and I'm sure you've got a bunch of them to tell, but I'll be getting to that in a little bit. But you've got a new DVD coming out on February 23rd, right?
That's exactly right, from Chile with Love.
Awesome. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. It was recorded in Santiago, Chile, at Teatro Caupolicán, and the place was packed.
Oh, wow.
And the place was rocking.
Wow.
And we had like an 8-camera shoot, and we did 18 performances. There's a couple of bonus videos on this DVD and 5 new songs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we took advantage of it to just put as much as we could possibly put on there. And I'm proud to tell you, Brother Gary, that my wife and I, Lisa and I, are taking $3 from each of these DVDs that sell for $14.99.
Okay.
And $3 goes to our Veterans Support Foundation.
Awesome.
In Silver Spring, Maryland, is where the main office is, but they're in every state in the union, Veterans Support Foundation, and they take often afflicted vets who have health conditions, you know, unique
right.
to their military service, of course.
Right.
Exposure to Agent Orange, you know, and the things that in the Gulf War that the kids came home with.
Right.
And but the Veterans Support Foundation puts these people from the street. I mean, they scrape them up off the street, put them in a home. They rehab them.
Wow.
They get them back on their feet. They get them to where they are producing something in this society.
Yeah, wow.
With pride. And I'm just so proud of this organization, because Keith King, who is the head of the Vietnam Veterans of America,
mm-hmm.
I've been associated with King since back in, 1968.
Wow.
We did a guitar army at Harpo's in Detroit, and Dick Wagner was there, Randy California, Rob Tyner from the MC5,
wow.
and we just did a big bash for the veterans. It was great, and this is Keith King's baby. I played for the Vietnam veterans at the Wall, the 25th anniversary of the Wall in D.C.
Awesome.
And because they asked me to come and bring my guitar and sing my song, because
yeah.
the vets voted for it, and all the vets, Vietnam veterans, voted "I'm Your Captain"
wow.
as their favorite song. He says, if you could come and sing that song, man, it would bless our hearts. I asked him if they was going to have a stage and lights and everything, and he says, oh, yeah, we're going to have a stage, lights. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, brother, I'm going to put the band in a bus, and we're going to come there, and we're going to put a show on, a complete show for you veterans that ain't going to cost you a penny.
Awesome.
And I'm telling you what, they loved it. And not only U.S. Vietnam veterans, but our Canadian brothers
oh,
and sisters were there, too.
Awesome.
And when it got to singing "I'm Your Captain," but it's like, try to sing with a softball in your throat.
Oh.
You know, the emotion
yeah.
was just so high.
Right.
And I would like to commend Keith King and his organization for what they're doing for all of our veterans now with the Veterans Support Foundation. And if it's okay, I'll give the 800
yeah.
number for it.
Sure.
Gary.
Go ahead.
It's 800-882-1316. That's the Veterans Support Foundation. If you know a vet or know of a vet that needs help, give them a holler. 800-882-1316.
Awesome.
God bless you.
Man, that's awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, brother.
That, you know, and I know they appreciate you. I know they, everybody appreciates you, the veterans, you know, and they love your music. And, you know, people like you are the reason why they're doing okay, you know, because a lot of times people forget about those guys and they kind of get, you know, left behind, so to speak. But people like you that are really supporting them, you know, need to be recognized too. So thank you for all that you do for that, because that's a big deal.
I appreciate that, Brother Gary. Appreciate the encouragement, buddy.
Yes, sir. And the music, I mean, I know that they listened to your music back in the day, and that's probably the reason, you know, a lot of the reason why they kept going. The music is inspiring. You know, it pumps you up and motivates you, you know. I mean, that's always a positive thing, you know. And
yeah,
that you can't sit still to Grand Funk Railroad. Is that right? You know? I've never been able to. I just can't.
The That is so good, man. I think, you know, when you speak, I'm thinking in word pictures, and I can just see you just a dance.
Oh, man. I've actually tried to sing Some Kind of Wonderful in front of a crowd, but it wasn't nowhere near like the original. But
at least you done it, man. You had the balls to get up and do it.
That's it. Yeah, man. That's it. So when you're playing in front of a crowd, like, you know, in Chile and places like that, I mean, how does it feel? I mean, what's your favorite part of performing and being in front of a crowd like that?
Well, the anticipation of being taking that first step out onto the deck.
Uh-huh.
You know, when you're down in the dressing room and you've been there for an hour, woodshed, and getting your hand ready and getting your mind ready, and you ain't been talking to anybody because you've been keeping people away from you for an hour.
Yeah.
And you're just ready to spring out there on that stage like a spring chicken. You know,
right.
Something gets all up in us, and it is supernatural. It really is kind of like an out of body experience sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when you have fans that are so revved up like they were in Chile. And these South American Chilean fans, and they weren't just Chilean. I mean, there was some Peruvian fans, yeah. and you know, we had people from Argentina there. Oh, man, we just had so many people from South America, and they love American rock
awesome.
And roll.
That's good
They
stuff.
Just love it. And they sing, I'm telling you, Gary, they sing it louder than the PA.
Wow.
At times. Yeah. When I come out and I'm singing, Are You Ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready? Oh, man. The whole audience is singing. It's like, it's stunning. It really is. And when you see this video, this is, to me, it's my favorite part of the video, is just the enthusiasm and the emotional waves of satisfaction that are hitting that stage and just bowling us over and pumping us up higher. And I don't know if my feet ever did touch the stage that night. I might have been just floating there about 3 feet off the deck, and that's where I spent my time for about 2 hours.
Well, I imagine they were floating too. I mean, that's to be in that, you know, mode and that being around that music, you know, with all those people, you know, and you're already pumped up and you got a crowd, you got the music going, you know, there's no better place to be. I don't think that's good stuff.
Yeah, man,
that's awesome.
And that's my country, you know, wherever it is in the world, Gary, that whatever the dimensions of that stage is, that's how big my country is. And I take the whole thing when I get up there. I'm going to dominate. My band is going to take over, and we're just going to saturate the audience with love.
Awesome. And
yeah.
So in after all these years, I mean, do you think that same excitement that you had like 50 years ago is still within you? And you know, why do you think that it's so strong like that?
Yeah, because it's a connection, Brother Gary. They know me. These people know me because I am who my songs say I am.
Awesome. Yeah, you
and can. They know this guy. They know this character.
Right.
They know my heart because I poured it out in songs to them over the years. And they had to learn English to figure it out. So they got educated in the process.
Right.
And like I said, these South American, normally Spanish, Hispanic people, they speak, you know, Spanish, but they sing American rock and roll as good as you and me, brother.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I guess you're looking forward to playing again one day, you know, I mean,
yeah,
after this crappy year we had, but I mean, that I think people are going to be ready for you by the time, you know, all this blows over. Hopefully they'll be more pumped up than ever. You might be floating, you know, 30 feet in the air after that.
Yeah, here we go.
That's good.
Come on.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, buddy. I'm there with you.
And you've got other things going on. There's, I think, an album with Alice Cooper, right, that you got?
Yeah.
What's going on with that?
Well, we did this thing with Alice Cooper. It's called Breadcrumbs. And I say we. Myself, Brother Wayne Kramer, guitar player from the MC5. Mm-hmm. And Brother B, Bedanjic, he was with Mitch Ryder in the Detroit Wheels, Johnny Bedanjic, so we call him Johnny B.
Okay.
He's laying down the law on this stuff. And of course, Alice Cooper, he was, singing, and he was in character, and what a great guy Alice is.
Awesome.
And Bob Ezrin, the producer, what an intense producer this guy is. No wonder they're still together. They're still a team, after all of these years.
Yeah.
I mean, right from the first LP on.
That's cool.
It was great to work in the studio with them to do the old Detroit rock and roll, some of the Bob Seger stuff and Suzy Quatro. And it's just, roots kind of rock and roll that we, it's part of who we are. It's part of our signature, each one of us, the Michiganders.
Right.
And since Alice is a Michigander, he wanted to give kudos and credence to the spot where he was reared and where he got his music education.
Yeah.
So when we got wind of this, and they asked me if I would come and play, I said, hell yes, man, I would do that. Are you kidding me? Right. I'll be there dressed up and doing it.
There you go.
It'd be good. And to work with the bass player, Paul Randolph, mm-hmm. who did not only played his ass off on this record, but he sang. I'm sitting there, in the studio. You get your cans on, your headphones, and everybody's around this microphone. And I take one about halfway off, such so I can hear everybody else, So I'm not completely like just closed into my own voice. And man, I'm hearing this pretty voice. I'm thinking, dang, who is that? I look up there because I'm thinking Paul's probably about 6'3" or so. And I'm down here at 5'7" and I'm looking up there at that big boy. And I said, is that coming out of you, dude?
What is that? Yeah.
It was great. It was so good. I'm telling you, I asked Paul because he's a Detroit boy. I didn't know we had him in this state. I'd have been in touch with him long ago, but I asked him to join my group, and he very willingly has been out on the road with me ever since.
Awesome.
Every show we've done,
wow.
Paul's there, and he's playing and singing and being part of our positive, our signature that we put on people. And I'm proud to have done that with Alice Cooper. I'm proud to be part of what Alice is doing, giving his kudos to his background and to those people in Michigan that had a big effect on him and have had a even more of an effect on the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's, I was saying to somebody recently that all this music, especially all, like your time, from the 60s, 70s and that era, awesome music that people really need to hear and really positive. We need more of that. Why do you think that today's music doesn't have that same kind of, like Bob Seger said, that soul? Why isn't that in rock? Why is rock kind of gone out of the way? Where's that at? What do you think about that?
Well, I think because in 1996, when they deregulated the FCC under the Clintons,
mm-hmm.
And a whole bunch of other underhanded stuff. But that deregulation of the FCC, just think about this for a minute. Before the deregulation, there was a 777 rule. You could own 7 AM, 7 FM, 7 television stations.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these stations were owned by American families because you couldn't, own a whole slew of them like you can now.
Right.
But when they deregulated, you could own as many as you could possibly afford, which took the airplay and all of the communication that disc jockey had with us, his audience in our town. It took that relationship away. It took that oneness away. It took our ability to have a say-so over what we was listening to away.
Right.
And it took away the chance of you going and recording a record like we did back when we was 19 years old. We recorded a song in Nashville, Tennessee called Harlem Shuffle. And we did a good job of it. And we drove all night to get back up to Michigan. And we had a 45 in our hand of this Harlem Shuffle. And we went into WTAC. Bob Dell was on the air. And we had been listening to him from the state line. So we were so geeked up, man. We walked into the studio. There's Bob Dell. He's spinning these records. Hey, it's the Pack. You know, because we had the, back then it was before it was Grand Funk, we were the Fabulous Pack.
Awesome.
So the Pack came in, and we said, hey, Bob, dude, will you please spin this? He said, hell yeah. And he took the record, and he put it on the spindle, Gary, and gave that thing a spin. And everybody, you know, from the state line to Flint, Michigan, that was listening, heard the Harlem Shuffle for this first time. That wow. doesn't happen anymore. We don't have that kind of freedom anymore, because what happened when they deregulated was all of this, you know, you got to stop. This is where all this censorship
yeah.
started.
Right.
This is where it started, man.
Right.
Back then when they deregulated, when it was regulated and it was in the hands of people, American grandpas and grandmas and moms and dads. Brother, we'd go over to Herman Spiro's house in Cleveland, Ohio. He owned Channel 5 there, and he did the Upbeat show. We'd just go over there and to his house and have a barbecue with the kids and play wow. touch football and what have you.
Right.
You know, it was always a family thing. Well, that family is gone, dude.
Yeah.
It's and I'm a guy who came up through, you know, not having a television. We had a radio that my aunt's six kids and my mom's six kids had all sat in front of that radio with big barrel bags of popcorn
yeah.
eating and staring into that speaker, buddy. You know, we went from that, you know, onto television, and then when they deregulated, oh man, it became so dark,
yeah.
and all the friendliness that we used to enjoy, you know, going and talking with these people because they were our friends and
yeah.
they loved us because, you know, what we did, our kind of music that we played and just our personality around their children. They loved to have us come around. But I'm telling you, that shot us so bad.
Yeah.
It was the begin. It was like letting that first hole in our life raft. It started letting the air out and we've been sinking ever since, brother.
Right. I agree. It certainly has changed, you know, totally. And what do you think, though, if possible, what do you think could bring some of that back? If it's possible, what would it take?
It would take re-regulation of the FCC and force these big monopolies to break up their monopolies and sell back to the people and give us our rights.
Right.
That's what it would take.
And it might start a chain reaction of other things. You know, I mean, that's what it's all
oh,
about.
Oh, yeah.
It's about we the people. I'm just saying. That's another topic.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah, buddy.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It's just, I think we need to always remember that. Always remember who's supposed to be in charge anyway. But,
yeah,
that's, you're right about that. And I used to work at a radio station and, you know, and it used to be fun to you know, have people listening and do different things and have songs that were, you know, that everybody recognized. And now it's kind of like, I don't even think I listen to radio hardly because of the music. I mean, I listen to classic, you know. I listen to Grand Funk Railroad, doggone.
All right.
And I crank it up.
My man. All
yeah.
right.
Uh-huh. No. And speaking of which, can you... When you were talking about right before you started, you know, and you had that 45. So how did you begin working with the band Grand Funk Railroad? How did all that start?
Well, we were the Pack was out on the East Coast. We were doing these series of some gigs at that Delta Promotions, who we were signed with as far as a booking agency out of Michigan, they got us these gigs, and they said, the only thing is, you're going to have to go out there and play for free, but we'll get you these gigs, and if you guys can make an impression on these people, they'll have you back and pay you some good money. So we said, let's go. We went out there, and we were living on Cape Cod in summer cottages, beach cottages, right, in East Sandwich, Massachusetts. And the worst snowstorm in the history of the world came down on us, and there we were, all of our starfish and seashells and all the things that we collected, because this is the first time we ever been on an ocean beach, you know, boys from Michigan. Right. We picked that stuff up, and we had them down in the crawl space underneath these little cabins where, you know, the water and stuff was. And after that snowstorm, and it was snowing and rain at first, but it turned into just solid snow, and it packed us in there. And we were there for 2 weeks in those summer cottages with nothing to eat except oatmeal. And we had to melt down snow to make the oatmeal. We had nothing to put in the oatmeal. Wow. So it was just oatmeal. And all the pipes was froze. So we couldn't flush a toilet. Oh. We had to do a number two in a sack. And through a chair that didn't have no seat in it. That was our little makeshift kind of deal. Yeah. And then we would take it out in the snowbank someplace, dig a little hole and bury it. Man, I'd have hated to have been around for spring cleanup, buddy.
When it thawed out, it was rough. You're talking about the oatmeal. Don't try the yellow snow. I'm just saying, the yellow snow has to go.
That's right.
I can honestly, you're talking about that. I can relate to that because, you know, I'm from Alabama. I was telling you, no snow here, right? But I was working with the oil field, and we had to go to North Dakota, and it was 30 below zero. And guess what? The our generator broke the first night, and I woke up and my feet were frozen. And
oh my word!
And we had to do the same thing. I had to use the bathroom out, and you know. But there was there's like no trees in North Dakota. It was like just snow everywhere. So we had to go, you know, wherever, you know. And it was like, and something started to smell. I'm like, what? You know, what is that? But stay away from the yellow snow if you're making oatmeal. But yeah, so yeah. So carry on.
Yeah, man.
Carry on.
We were stranded there 2 weeks, and finally the guy who owned the East Sandwich grocery store up there, he was fronting us the oatmeal because we didn't have any money. We just said, man, when our guy comes over from the mainland, when he gets here, we'll just pay you back, you know. And we did. Mm-hmm. But what we did do was call from his phone. We got him to let Don call his mother, and his mother found a Western Union place up the coast on the mainland. So Don Brewer and myself, the drummer and myself, hitchhiked up the coast to this drugstore and got the money. We rented a Ford Econoline van, put all our equipment in it, and came back to Michigan. Well, two of the guys in the band at that time, two of the guys were married. The guitar player from Canada, Kenny Rich, and Craig Frost, who was a keyboard player from Flint, Michigan, he was married too. And both their wives threatened to divorce them if they ever left Michigan.
Oh, wow.
You know, so the band broke up. And I says to Brewer, why don't we, you know, form a three piece? Jimi Hendrix is doing it. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are doing three piece now. And he says, well, who would we get? And I said, well, I don't know, but we'd have to get a badass bass player. We just really have to get a good one, you know. And so we went up to Delta Promotions to give those people a piece of our mind, because we found out when we were out there that we were actually getting paid $350 a night to play those gigs.
Wow.
But we weren't seeing any of that money, none of that money. Mm. But the guy that was taking care of us out there and put us in the cabins, he was taking that money. Mm. We didn't know about that till we got back to Michigan. We were going to give him a piece of our mind. So we go up there to Delta Promotions, and we're sitting out in the waiting room, and this place has got a rehearsal facility in it, and there's a band in there rehearsing, and Brewer and I sitting there looking at each other. I said, listen to that bass player, dude. You couldn't hear anything but the bass. Wow. I mean, you know, it was a rehearsal facility, pretty good, but that bass was coming through the walls, and I said, whoever that is a hell of a bass player, man. We need to find out who that is. So when they took a break, and Mel Shocker comes walking out, and I go, oh, my God, it's Mel Shocker playing that bass. And Mel and I had jammed together. We rode motorcycles together, smoked joints together. I mean, you know, we done everything together because right. we both went to the same high school, right. Kersley High School. He was a year behind me. And I told him, I said, Mel, man, we are thinking about making a three-piece group. Would you want to? You know, would you want to be a bass player for us? He says, dude, I am so looking to leave this band. There was some bad blood. They had some arguments or whatever just, you know, prior to their rehearsal. He says, I'm there. Count me in. So that's how Grand Funk started.
Awesome.
And our manager, Terry Knight, he was a songwriter also, and he had written a song called Grand Funk Railroad, and it was a playoff of an actual railway system that runs through Canada, through Michigan and Ohio, so through Ontario, Canada, Michigan and Ohio, and it's called Grand Trunk and Western Railway.
Hmm.
So that we adopted that name, and the audience shortened it for us to Grand Funk.
Right.
Just like they shortened Chicago Transit Authority to Chicago.
Right.
You know, the fans did that for us, and the rest is history, my brother.
That's an awesome story. That, you know, the humble beginnings, and then you go through all that stuff, you know, and it makes you who you are, I guess, right?
It sure does. Yeah, man. I've never forgot my beginnings, but I've seen a lot of examples in the music industry. There's a lot of people who've actually allowed that stardom to go to their heads, and the things that the people say about them, I wouldn't want people talking about me that way. I don't know, they let it get to their head and they just think they're really something, and I just never wanted to be that way.
Yeah.
So I haven't been. I just stayed me,
right?
And I kind of like me.
Yeah,
the way I am, I don't have nothing to live up to. I'm going to go there. I'm going to do the best job I can, and I'm going to play them songs that I wrote for people, and they're going to rock because it happens every dang time.
That's it, man. That's a good attitude to have after all these years, and you still have the same attitude, right? And that's good.
Yeah, man.
Well, what's your relationship with the I know you're not in the band anymore, but what's your relationship with those guys? Do you ever talk to those guys?
Well, only in court, and we have a corporate meeting once a year, which I'm a shareholder, so I'm in on the meeting, but I'm not a officer within the corporation. They threw me out of the corporation as an officer back in 98 or something like that. It's been a long time. But it's just bad blood, and I've heard people have said to me, you know, we read an article that Don Brewer said, you know, that it was you that was keeping the band apart, and that he said never say never. I said, well, tell him to let's put the band back together.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get him to do that for over 20 years. I said, you know, you guys are out there using the name, and you go out and tell people that you're Grand Funk. I said, but I wrote 92% of that music. How can you say this?
Right.
You know, how can you honestly say that? Well, there's a lot of stuff that goes down in our world, brother, as you know, a lot of phonies and a lot of people just acting out the part.
Right.
And they weren't fair with the audience as far as I'm concerned, because they would have said, Grand Funk Revisited or something like that, just to let them know it's not the real deal.
Right.
And the guy that wrote and sang 92% of that music is not going to be up there entertaining.
Right.
But they did put three guys in the group to take my place.
Wow.
So, you know, they're a five-piece band.
That's crazy.
And the drummer and I don't get along because he's just been real hard on me, and so many lawsuits and so many threats and so many cease and desist letters because they took me to a federal court, and the only way I can legally use Grand Funk Railroad in my advertising is specifically 50% lower, less font size as Mark Farner, and it's got to say formerly of Grand Funk Railroad, and only the first letters of those four words can be capitalized. So if it's and it has to be capitalized. So formerly of, if the O doesn't have, if it's not capitalized, that's a violation.
Wow.
Trust me, that's been a violation a lot of times because the promoters don't really follow what the radio station's going to do with that ad or what the newsprint's going to be in the town for that ad. They really don't.
Right.
And they kind of come up with stuff. And so I've been in, I can't tell you how many times, but the last time we were in court, they were suing me over me having a name, and I applied for this trademark and got the trademark from the federal government, Mark Farner's American Band, and they didn't like that, and they sued me, and we spent a lot of time, a lot of money with attorneys, thousands and thousands of dollars, and in my case, I was paying my attorneys, and because I'm a third shareholder of the corporation, I was paying a third of their attorneys who were suing me.
Wow. That's
so crazy. But wow. The bottom line is the federal judge found in favor of yours truly and said, you can't tell the government that they made a mistake on giving this man his trademark. You can't go back and tell this judge. And so anyways, they walked out of that courtroom with the tails between their legs, and it was good to know that at least one time I was victorious in standing my grounds. It cost me a lot of money, and we could have put that money on the farm. It'd have been nice to pay down the mortgage by that much, I'll tell you that.
Right.
But it's really nice to have that behind me, and not that threat anymore. I would still go out and play music with those guys because, brother, I'm a fan.
Awesome.
I'm a Beatles fan, and I could never figure out, Gary, why those guys wouldn't just do it for the fans when they were all still sucking air.
Yeah,
I was saying, come on, you guys, what is the matter with you? Put the, bury that hatchet.
Yeah,
and put that band out there where we can see it. Come on, bring it for us fans.
That's
the way I feel with Grand Funk. Come on, let's just bury the hatchet and let's put the real band out in front of the people. Just give the fans what only three guys in this world can give. And we're still sucking air. But, they won't listen to it. And that's just ego BS, That's all that is.
It's sad.
And I don't know why. I guess it is professional jealousy.
Yeah, no.
But jealousy is jealousy, and it's just a human nature thing. But I am going to say it again in the next corporate meeting. I'm going to repeat myself and tell them that we're all missing the boat and we should go out and give it to the fans.
There you go.
The original Grand Funk while we're still sucking air.
That's it. I've never understood that, which I like bands like Grand Funk and like Journey. I'm a big Journey fan, and I always wonder why can't those guys just say, this is what we did. We can't go back and change anything. But the fans have loved you for all these years, like you said. And to me, I'm thinking if the fans want to hear new music, or why not give it to them? And I know it's hard sometimes to put aside differences and, but doing it for the fan, it's like staying in a marriage for your kids or something. I don't know. It's just sometimes you got to do it for the kids, I mean, I don't know. But
that's right, brother.
So
that's serious.
And you got, I mean, you're you're still sucking air, as you said. I mean, and a lot of people this past year aren't.
Yeah.
They're not here.
Yeah, brother.
And so we can't look into the future thinking, you know, I'm just never going to do anything with that guy or this band ever again. That's a scary thought when you've got, you know, people that would just love, you know, to hear that. And it would motivate a lot of people. And it would probably start this chain reaction, you know. But
man,
right?
Yeah, I would hope so. And I think you're right, Gary. Definitely.
Yeah, that's all that, you know, I love to hear about people is getting along and working out differences, and you know, and that's what fans want to hear, and you know,
yeah.
So
it's what they want to hear, and it's what they want to come and see too.
Yeah, that's true too. I know a lot of people give you know, like talking about Journey again, you know, if it's not Steve Perry, they don't want to hear. You know, they want to hear the guy that had all the hits with the, you know, and it's no offense to, you know, anybody that would take his place, but they're focused on those songs. And and if it'd be different if he had died or something, but if he's still around too, you know. So I mean, it's like,
that's right. If he's still, you know, singing.
Yeah.
Yep.
So you've got to, you know, if they're still available, and you know what, I think that they can still, it would be, you know, if they didn't want to do it forever, at least do a couple of shows, you know, and say, this is the original band. Let's do about three or four shows and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. That's I've taken that approach too. But I don't know what it's going to take. Maybe this COVID would knock the senselessness out of them, and they'll get some sense in them and go, well, maybe we should do that. Maybe we should try that.
I think so.
You think it's ZZ Top? They don't even look at each other. They don't. They got three different tour buses. They don't talk to one another.
Wow.
They show up on stage together, make their music, and the audience don't know no different. But they don't get along, and they don't make no bones about it. I mean, we could even do that.
Yeah.
But I would hope that we would have amended relationship, and that the people would see that, because it takes that continuity on stage to put the performance over the top. And that's what I believe that people want to hear, the original, that recipe. There's only three ingredients in the whole world that can make that song, and that's Mark Farner, Don Brewer, and Mel Shocker. That's the ingredients.
Right.
And that's what makes the sound, and that's what nothing else can take the place of.
Right.
So, you know, I'm hoping that we can get back out and do it before one of us stopped sucking air, dude. Yeah.
I'm in total agreement. I'm sure a lot of people agree with it. Well, in the meantime, as you're waiting for that, you know, you had like a solo career, I guess, after you left the band, right? And
yes.
So tell me about that.
Well, I didn't leave the band. Don Brewer was the one that left the band.
Okay.
He initiated our first breakup in 1976.
Okay.
He came into the rehearsal studio one day, an hour and a half late, and he was never late for anything. He was always a punctual guy, and we're thinking, where in the heck is Brewer? And this is before cell phones, you know, back in the 70s.
Right.
And he came in, and we were all sitting in the control room waiting on him, and he walks into the control room, and he says, guys, I'm going to make this announcement one time. I'm gonna do something that's more stable with the rest of my life. I'm going to do something that's more stable. I quit.
Wow.
And I looked up at him, and I look over at Mel, and I said, did you just say you quit? And he says, yeah, it's over, man, and he walks out. And that was it. That's when I put my solo band together.
Wow.
And I went out and I started, you know, I had two albums on Atlantic Records back then, 77 and 78. And then in 81, Grand Funk got back together, Mel Shocker, Don Brewer, and myself. And just before we were going to go out to sign the contract with Warner Brothers in L.A., Mel Shocker calls up and says, man, you guys are going to have to do this without me. I can't fly anymore. I'm afraid to get on an airplane. Wow. And we just kind of freaked out because we had been working on these songs. We had a whole record together, and we were going to go out and record it, you know, on Warner Brothers. So Don and I said, well, you know, Dennis Bellinger from Flint, Michigan, he's a Flint boy. He's got the Flint funk all over him, and he sings, too. Let's use him. And so we did. We got Dennis Bellinger, and we went into the studio and recorded Grand Funk Lives and What's Funk, the two albums for Warner Brothers. It was the Full Moon label. Full Moon was Irving Azoff back then.
Oh.
And so we, just as we were getting ready to release our first record there, Grand Funk Lives, Irving dumped his label on Full Moon, and there was nobody there to run it. He just he walked from it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was kind of bad for us.
Yeah.
There was nobody there promoting us. Our manager and our, you know, nobody could figure out what was going on and why it was going on, but we didn't get very far with that rendition of Grand Funk. And so it wasn't until 1995 that Mel and I were talking again about it, and we had a reunion in 96, and they agreed, and I agreed, because I had my own solo career going a lot of years, and I said, I will do this, but I can't do it just totally Grand Funk. I got to have my solo dates in there too. And they said, well, you can't have that and Grand Funk at the same time. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll do it for 2 years, just nothing but Grand Funk. And let's get this thing started. I'll devote all my time for 2 years to this. I said, but then I'm going to do my own stuff too. I'll do Grand Funk, but I have to go to do some of my solo shows. I got great audiences, you know?
Right.
So they agreed. We all agreed. And then one night after a show in 1998, we were in California, Conocti Harbor, and Don Brewer came to my room and said, hey, Mark, we all need to sign the individual ownership of the trademark into the corporation where it will have a protective umbrella or something like that.
Right.
And I just thought, that's a good idea. I thought he was looking out for the band, the best interest of the band and everything.
Yeah.
I said, okay, cool, man, I'll do that. And he says, all right, dude, I'll go to my room and get the papers. And I wondered when he went, I said to myself, I'm thinking, why the heck didn't he just bring the papers with him, dipstick?
Right.
But I didn't realize what I was doing was giving them guys the noose to slip around my neck.
Yeah.
And because I didn't know Brewer was out to stab me in the back until I got the notice that I was no longer an officer of the corporation and those guys were going to go out and tour without me.
Mm.
So, that was kind of like the end of it right there. And it's been that way ever since. It's just kind of, you know, sad. But, I'm full of forgiveness. I'll tell you that. That's what makes my life. Because I won't let somebody crap on my lunch sack.
I might have to use that one too. I got to remember. I'm going to write all these down. Don't let anybody crap. Don't eat yellow snow, and don't let anybody crap on your lunch sack. Hey, but you know what I always said about forgiveness, and I'm a forgiving person. And the thing is, I'm thinking about the root word and like to forgive. For me, I'm thinking to forgive something. That means like before you give. So I'm thinking the amount of forgiveness that's within you is already there, and it should already be there. Like if you got, you know, unconditional love for everybody, you're ready to forgive because you've already got that within you. All you're doing is giving them a piece of your forgiveness that you've already had for all these years. So nothing they do is gonna, you know, there's nothing they can do that you won't forgive. You know,
that's right.
And hopefully when they see that, they won't do things to cause, you know, them to, you to have to forgive them, you know, and that's just, and I think
right on.
You know, and I think that if he, you know, anybody you have problems with, you just need to look at the facts. I'm wondering what their side, I mean, you know, what is his side and their side about how do you, when they, if they did you wrong, what is their side? Do they just ignore facts or do they, you know, hope that, you know, people don't see that? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, I think that must be it. But, or they just don't give a rip as long as they can say that they're Grand Funk. There's always somebody that'll buy that phony name. I mean, look at Foreigner. There's not even one original member in that group, and right. They go out and call it Foreigner.
It's
and I was
crazy.
on a call with Gunnar Nelson, and he was a guest DJ down in Cleveland, and we were talking, and he says, "Mark, I had to call you because I just found out that there, you know, the group called the Platters," and I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, the Platters, there's 126 different groups. One guy owns the trademark, wow. And he licenses all of these bands to go out as the Platters, and he takes a piece of every show that
wow.
gets played." And I went, "Oh, man, you got to be kidding." Well, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. And it's taking advantage of the fans, taking advantage of that nostalgia and all of that, and playing it to the hilt, just like a huckster would.
Yeah. I understand about the fans, but like you said, if you still have the guys that did the original music, you might as well let them do it. And you know, everybody could be happy, you know, if you did a few here, and they could still do their little thing, but just as long as you got to do yours too. Why can't we all get along?
Yeah. Why can't we be friends?
Yeah, there you go. Sing it, brother. That's really, I think if everybody would kind of look deep in themselves about forgiveness, I think this country and the world might be a better place if you look at what you did, look at what they did, and say, "Hey, how can we work this out?" Because life is short, and we don't have time.
Man, it is.
We don't have time to waste especially when
it
ain't like, you know, you listen to Grand Funk Railroad and you're thinking, "This is some of the best music I've ever heard in my life." So why would you not want to do that again? I don't want to do that anymore. Yeah, that sucked. I don't want to do that. Nah. Millions of fans, can't be wrong. You know, I mean, but speaking of fans, my late uncle Terry Stuckey was a drummer in a band called Storm years ago on Bell Records, but he was a big fan of yours and Grand Funk which I play music too, and I'm really into that bass sound and that your vocals and the whole sound, the whole style was just awesome, and it was really rocking and you know, so what was the influences for that sound? What would you say led to that sound that y'all had?
Well, being born and raised in Flint, Michigan sure didn't hurt.
Yeah.
we had Wham Radio, we had WTRX, WTAC, and we had CKLW, which is across the river in Canada, and Rose Marie, and they all played Motown. They all played R&B music. And when my sister and I go to the dances and we'd enter the dance contest and win, it's because we danced together. My mother showed us how to, you know, coordinate and dance with one another. And so we did. And we'd go out there and people would just look at us like, "Man, look at them go." You know, and that was,
yeah.
I loved dancing. And I loved it when we would win the contest and people would come up and go, "Man, how do you do that?" You know, it's where we come from.
Yeah.
It's it was in us. And even when we was young kids and Kurt Johnson, first guitar player in the first band, him and I had set up and listened to his grandmother's old wooden radio. Man,
oh, wow.
This thing was about 4 foot tall, had a great big speaker in the front. And we would tune it in to WLAC in Nashville, Tennessee, to the John R.'s Royal Crown hairdressing show.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And we, yeah, from Nashville, Tennessee, awesome. WLAC, and we would listen to the deep blues. Boy, I'm telling you, and we would eat horseradish and mayonnaise sandwiches on white bread folded over.
Wow, the good stuff.
Yeah, that's right, and run each other out of the room.
Yeah, I bet. And yeah, it's like yeah, when you didn't have the toilets. I mean, I bet you that was if you ate that, and you know that would have been rough. Yeah, stay away from me, pal.
That's right. That's right.
What?
Have mercy.
That's you know, but in looking at you and seeing your you know recent videos, you know, you still got the energy and the desire, and you still have fun. And I think that's why you're going to keep going and people are going to be happy because you have that within you. You make people want to do it themselves and you make people want to dance, man. You're on the stage and you move around and you make them feel the music. And that's what it's all about.
Man, I appreciate that, Brother Gary. You can't even imagine how I appreciate that encouragement, brother.
Well, it's to me talking to people like you, I mean, that I grew up listening to, and it's just a part of who I am, you know, musically and just everything that I love. And it's an honor to talk to people like you. And I always feel like this bond, you know, with all the people I've talked to, I'm like, this is now my friend. So I consider you my friend that you came on this show and,
yeah.
I appreciate you, man. And I'm hoping all the best, to you in the future. I'm looking forward to hearing all this music that you've got and the DVD and the Alice Cooper and everything. And maybe I can get to see you out there one day.
Yeah, man, I'm hoping so. And I appreciate it too, Brother Gary. And I appreciate all the listeners for Real Music Podcast there you got going. Thanks. And, God bless you, man. Knock 'em alive.
That's it, man.
Knock 'em alive, brother.
Thanks, man. Thanks for talking today. I appreciate you.
It's been my pleasure.
Well, have a good day.
And you. If I don't see you in the future, I'll see you in the pasture.
Amen.
Okay, brother.
All right.
Bye for now.
Bye.